It is Saturday, April 3rd, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, in the first half, geek news, and in the second half, getting things done with OmniFocus and the Omni Group applications.
Hi, everybody. This is Al Luckow. I'm down here live at the UPS where the much-heralded iPad is finally shipping. This is the first day any of us average Joes could possibly get their hands on one of these babies. This is truly a historic day, but it's pandemonium down here with people trying to get their iPads even before they leave the facility. I haven't seen in this kind of excitement since the Cabbage Patch Doll phenomenon. Which, by the way, if you're still into Cabbage Patch Dolls, this would be a good time to go get one with everybody's attention diverted to the iPad today. Back to you, Lyle.
In all seriousness, folks, today does mark the day the iPad becomes available. We'll be looking forward to what your impressions are of the device. If you're one of the lucky ones who are getting one, be sure to drop us a line at geekspeak.org and let us know what you think, okay? Ben, where are you going?
I'm going off to the UPS store.
Ben, Al just made that story up. He's sitting right here.
I'm right here.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a recording.
Yes, sorry. It just seems so real.
It did seem so real, doesn't it? Welcome to Geek Speak, bridges and gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today on the program, Brian Covey from the Omni Group will be speaking with us in the second half of the show about getting things done with help from their OmniFocus application on the Mac, the iPhone, the iPad Touch, and of course now, or say iPod Touch, and now, of course, the iPad. Anyways, they have a whole bunch of applications. It'll be fun to talk with them about that. Join the car guys, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, as they for their advice on things automotive, just about everything else on Car Talk every Saturday, 11 a.m. right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks, Al Luckow. He's a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hello, everybody.
The recording was great. Was that a chainsaw in the background?
Yeah, I had a chainsaw in there, a little kid's bike, a machine gun.
That was great.
It's so funny because when I listened to it on my laptop speakers, I couldn't hear that.
Yeah, so, I didn't hear the bus go by.
Love it. All right. And Ben Jaffe, a freelance media guy and Command Tab author. You want to talk about Command Tab?
Yeah, Command Tab is a Twitter account that I made about 3 weeks ago where I'm posting Mac keyboard shortcuts that I use several times a day. If you listen to the program often, you know that I'm a keyboard shortcut junkie, as it were. I use them all the time. And what inspired me to start it is a while ago we got an email from John Cook. He's the author of a Twitter account called Sans Mouse. That's S-A-N-S, as in without mouse. And that's Keyboard Shortcuts Twitter account for Windows users. And so I saw that and I thought, well, is there one for the Mac? Maybe there is somewhere out there. I didn't bother searching. I just figured it'd be more fun to do it. Yeah, so you can follow us on Twitter. That's Command Tab.
Well, you can
just
hit,
all
hit,
one or cool. Sans Mouse, and I'll put it up online as well.
Yeah,
after the show.
Geekspeak.org. All right, thanks. And you've been doing that for a while, and the commands are pretty fun, useful.
Yeah. I was doing it every day, and then I realized that's just not sustainable. I mean, I probably have 150 keyboard shortcuts that I use.
So you need to do every 3 days. You can get 3 years out of it or something.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to stretch it out.
Yeah, you'll stretch it.
I know you will. A year
and
a half.
You really use 150 key commands?
Oh, at least, I think.
And then, of course, you could always talk about launchers like Butler or Quicksilver as well.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But, I mean, squeezing that down into 140 characters, that's hard.
That's true.
It's hard to just write one keyboard shortcut.
Well, you should have a keyboard shortcut for your keyboard shortcuts.
That's a good point. I wish I'd thought of that.
Thank you very much. Al, you got some updates, some follow-ups?
Yes, I do. Last week, I mentioned EcoCradle, which was the environmental packaging that was made out of all organic material and glued together with mushrooms and stuff like that.
The packing that you could then throw in your garden and it would just decompose.
And you can decompost it and everything like that. And of course, the big question was, how much does it cost? And I didn't know. It wasn't very good reporting.
I called. Money.
Well, the guy ended up finally getting back to me, Sam Harrington, the environmental director and design engineer for Evocative Design. Yeah, I guess Evocative Design. And he says that the Eco Cradle costs the same as EPS Styrofoam. You know, it depends a little bit on the application, the unit volume, geometry, et cetera, but it is basically the same cost. So,
well, that's the right market to hit then. I mean, you need to hit that price, right?
That's great.
Okay, so and then you don't have an excuse.
There was another follow-up that actually a listener alerted me to. Thank you, Christian out there, sent in this one. A few weeks ago, I talked about the mystery of Windmere, where it was in England, and people's car fobs, the things that turn their alarms off and on, weren't working in this one block in England.
Right.
So,
and the report that the BBC did was all this, like, it's a ghost, or what is it?
Yeah, there's like a bar. And
but there was video.
The word for that is poltergeist, right?
Ah, poltergeist. Okay. There was a video of people, like, trying to unlock their cars, and it wouldn't work.
Yeah. And we're like, whoa, you know, was it a cosmic ray or something like that? Well, it turns out this telecom watchdog, it's only identified themselves as OFCOM, decided to investigate and sent field engineer Dave Thromber to Windermere with a special scanning equipment. And he determined that the reason that he used a spectrum analyzer to make a sweep of the locality.
Mm-hmm.
And he found the source of the interference was a wireless order taker in a nearby cafe.
So when you so the waiters were using this thing to take orders, and that transmission was going to the register, and whenever that happened, phones or fobs didn't work.
The key fobs use a very low power source to protect the life of the batteries inside, so that their use was drowned out by the power of Lazy Daisy, which is so the mystery had been solved.
Lazy Daisy strikes again.
Wasn't a ghost. So just a couple of follows.
Thank you very much.
When I saw that video online that they had, their NPR or whatever did a story on it, and it just seemed like just rampant confirmation bias.
It's so funny because one of the things we talked about that in the story was, I was like, there was probably just a spark generator down the street. Someone's messing around.
Right.
And then it's causing a lot of interference. But of course, it was a lot of interference.
That's I was guessing that it was some old guy sitting in his apartment like, yes, I'm going to mess with everyone.
Right.
The diabolical plan, wasn't it?
Exactly.
It was Lazy Daisy.
Which is not a bad joke.
For April Fool's joke. That's
if you're going to do
been good.
A joke,
if you
can
stop people from working.
Pretty funny. Yeah.
Do you have any follow-ups, Ben?
Yeah, I've got actually, I just wanted to follow up by giving a lot of the April Fool's jokes that we saw 2 days ago. So follow-up to April Fool's Day. In fact, I discovered it was April Fool's Day when someone posted on my Facebook and said, hey, don't let anyone get you. So luckily, I don't remember who it was, but luckily they got to me before anyone else got to me. So that was good. But Google had some really, really good things. I mean, pretty much every one of their projects had something. So some of my favorites were the homepage of Gmail was they wrote it was disemvoweled. They took out all the vowels on all of the words of the homepage. So it was just this mess of consonants and just horrible and ugly. They also introduced an animal translator for Google Translate. And apparently, it actually says, with the tagline being, bridging the gap between the animals and the humans. So it's almost like, that's almost like geek speak. Yeah, and there was actually an Android app that they had. So you could scan a little barcode, install the application, and it would provide you with some amusing translations depending on what animal you selected to translate from. So I mean, just the fact that they let their engineers spend time doing this, it's hilarious.
The one I saw was on YouTube, and YouTube's logo got changed to it was kind of a shadiness to it. But the thing that they did on April Fool's Day was they allowed for some people. I don't think everyone did this. Allowed a viewing style. You know how they have like 480p, and they have different resolutions you can choose. One of them was ASCII. And so you could actually watch the video in ASCII. And if anyone's familiar with this, the basic premise, you take a video, and there used to be this open source app that I'd run to do this. You take a video and you stream it through this, and instead of translating out to more bits, you'd actually translate out to a matching character of ASCII. So it would be text, basically, in color. And it's watchable. You can see the video. It's just not very clear.
Yeah, so if it's dark, then it'll use a character that uses a lot more black.
Right,
and then if
right.
it's light, it'll use like a period or something
And it's
that.
Pretty, I mean, the thing that reminded me is that I really liked that that little app. And you could pipe DVD movies through it.
Yeah.
So you can watch a whole movie in ASCII. Really cool.
I watched The Matrix in ASCII, which was kind of trippy. there were two more that I really loved. There was Google Docs had one. Google announced that Google Docs will have the capacity to upload anything including physical objects like keys, remote controls, etc. It said you can find physical objects like keys using Control F and send objects around the globe by uploading and downloading them at the low price of 10 cents per kilobyte or kilogram, excuse me.
Nice.
Per kilogram. And then the one that I love the most, I don't know why this tickles my fancy so much, but Google Books introduced a feature which allows any book to be read in 3D. Assuming the viewer had appropriate glasses, so you click the little button and it...
Did it actually work?
I don't know. I didn't actually see it. I just read about it. But, I mean, a book in 3D, I mean, kind of by definition, a book is a 2D plane, right? Especially when they're
the
scanning
it. The book itself is 3D. So maybe it's just the webpage itself was like a book and it was 3D and then text was just flat. That would be totally readable. I love it. Thank you very much for the updates, both of you. Al, what's going on with dog care?
Oh, I ran across this story, which is really weird. And, you know, it almost seems
Japanese?
Like... Yes.
yes.
Okay, but, sorry. But, you know, they're always into these, like, bizarre things that, you know, like, well, that's kind of a good idea, actually. It's a automatic dog washer. And what you do... is it's a washing machine basically that you put your dog in, and it's yeah, and they've got video there.
See, this is a quintessential weird thing. It's a both a good idea,
yeah,
and extremely creepy.
Yeah, it's a little weird because you know, you put the dog in there, but you know, dogs, some of them don't like to be. I mean, I could see a washing machine for your cat actually. My, you know, but
your cat could use a bath. You know, yeah. I hate giving baths to cats. It's true,
right? Because they really don't like baths.
No, and you get all that fur on your tongue, and it's really hard to get off.
coughing up fur balls later. But this thing, the dog goes in, and they just close the thing, and it just has friendly detergents and stuff that are non toxic and everything,
and it cleans
and
you
cleans the dog up. And the woman that's interviewed in this Yahoo News article, it's a video, and she, it's not Japanese, so, but they, you know, say what she's saying. Apparently, she got in it herself to make sure it was safe.
It must be relatively big.
They were kind of big. Yeah, they're like, it looks like a laundromat. It's actually a place that you bring your dog, you know.
Okay, what if you have like an itty bitty dog? Like a really small dog.
They're pretty scary. Does it have, does the head of the dog go inside? Or is
everything goes inside and they just close it up and you're in there.
No, that's not good at all.
I know, it's just really...
Is there like a breathing apparatus?
I think putting an animal into a human included into a thing that closes and then water shoots around.
Yeah, they don't
is
like
not
that.
Good. That whole drowning thing is scary.
Oxygen masks will deploy. Please secure your mask before.
But the thing
out.
Is, you know, every time you wash a dog, you're always like the nozzle and stuff, the nose and everything is always kind of something you don't do as well, right?
Or
there must be a trick to it, but you don't want to drown your dog.
Basically, it's just a box that has, you know, water that shoots.
Like a car wash.
Yeah. And it just kind of, you know, squirts
on
and stuff.
It doesn't spin.
Doesn't spin. There's no spinning in this dog wash machine.
See, that's what I love about your stories is that whenever you like half of your stories, when you introduce them, I imagine like a washing machine for a dog. And I imagine dog in washing machine spinning.
Dogs don't wear clothes. What do they need a washing machine for?
How does that work?
I got a dog that runs around and gets muddy all the time and tracks mud in the house. And, the shower that we clean the dog in is in the middle
of
the house.
It's like putting him in the shower. Get him in the shower.
Except that it probably has jets that shoot from the side and actually get the dog clean.
Yeah.
All right. All we need now is a tick removing machine.
Ooh, that would be really handy.
Thank you very much for the strange wash machine dog thing. Speaking of strange, what's going on with the LHC?
Yeah, I have a couple quick science news items. One is the LHC is finally up to speeds, I guess, to put it. So,
on Wednesday they arrested a time traveler. This guy was claiming he was a time traveler. He showed up in the LHC. You know about that?
Wait, are you serious? No.
That was their April Fool's.
Wednesday. No, that was Thursday.
Wednesday.
Thursday's April 1st. Yeah, see, you threw me
off. Wednesday because it was a time traveler. Come on, Ben. Get with it.
Yeah, you traveled back one day to undo one misdeed. So they smashed some particles together, some beams, and each beam was 3.5 TeV, TeVs. That's trillion electron volts. So in total, when you smash the two beams together going in the opposite direction, you get an actual collision energy of about 7 TeVs, which is half of the LHC's operational capacity. Also, I believe a new world record, considering that it's actually besting itself, because it just beat the world record at 1-point-something TeVs and then 3-point-something TeVs. So,
cool.
So in human terms, how much is 3 TeVs? 3 TeVs is roughly the amount of energy that you get if you put a single mosquito in flight. So it's not very much energy in human terms, but when you put all of that energy for a single in a single proton, then 3 TeVs is humongous. 3.5 TeVs is a humongous amount of energy for a single proton because protons are so small.
Is this the, if you're getting hit by a mosquito, that's the analogy I've heard before. If like a mosquito runs into your face, that's the kind of force we're talking about?
Yeah, I believe so.
What is it? Is it 3 trillion?
Three TeVs, yeah.
3 trillion
electron volts. So 3 trillion electron volts.
Very cool.
Yeah, so each of them were 3.5 TeVs, total of 7 TeVs. It's also in 2012, it's planned to hit 14 TeVs, and that's its max operational capacity. So hopefully when we hit that, then we'll be able to get a lot of good science out of it. And this was on March 29th, our time in the evening. And then the other thing I want to...
Is that actually effective at killing mosquitoes then?
There's been a lot of...
I'm looking for...
Yeah, there's been a lot of thinking of, like, what would happen if you were put inside of the LHC and it was turned on, right?
It's just ridiculous.
It seems like a lot of overhead.
Yes.
It would just, I don't know.
All right, move it. Is there anything else you want to cover on that story?
Yeah, I just want to cover, not on that story. I have one other story, but it's pretty quick.
Okay.
Okay, so it's, so David Bradley from Science Base took the periodic table of elements.
Science-based medicine.
Science Base.
Oh,
as in,
sorry.
It's a different.
Took
yeah.
the periodic table.
Mm-hmm. He took the periodic table of the elements and he associated all of the element symbols with a different science blog.
Oh, cool.
It's awesome.
So you can go there and click on a link, click on one of the elements and get to a science blog.
And you get to a science blog.
Okay, we'll have that on geekspeak.org.
Indeed.
And that would have been a perfect thing for the middle break podcast/blog mention.
Oh, I'll mention it at the middle break.
Again. Okay,
yeah.
In just a few
minutes.
Well,
I'll give a little more information about it, I guess.
Okay, sounds good. Al, what's going on with animals?
Yes.
This is creepy.
Well, the world's only immortal animal. You ever think, oh, I wish I could live forever? Well, there is something on the earth that technically seems like it has no known lifespan. It is the... I'm going to try to do this.
It's not a mosquito, is it?
No. That would be real disaster if they could live forever.
We could solve that problem, too.
It's the Turritopsis nutricula species of jellyfish. And it...
Well done.
It may have discovered the fountain of youth because it has the ability to go to cycle from a mature adult stage to an immature polyp stage and back again. So there's no natural limit to its lifespan. It's a hydrozoan jellyfish.
Wow. So it actually goes back to kind of a...
It can go back to being a kid and then back. And so it just keeps going back and forth.
So you have no idea how long it lives.
There's no way that it's a process called transdifferentiation, where one type of cell is transformed into another type of cell. Some animals can do limited transdifferentiation, like salamanders and stuff that can regrow their tails and stuff like that.
Sure.
But this thing can do its entire body. Of course, the drawback is, you know, you're a jellyfish. And as far as I can tell... I think these things are delicious because if they weren't, then this would be a world full of jellyfish.
Right.
Because they would be never dying.
Right.
So something must really be eating them.
Well, I don't know. I mean, perhaps they... Well, never mind, actually.
They do say they're found in oceans around the globe and they're native to the Caribbean waters. But Dr. Maria Miglietta of the Smithsonian Tropical... Marine Institute says we are looking at a worldwide silent invasion.
Because they don't talk.
Yeah. You know, I heard recently that the whole regrowing of limbs like a salamander can do there was an assumption, of course, that was a gene that they had that we don't. Mm-hmm. But in actuality, we have the gene to do that. Mm-hmm. We actually have a suppression gene that makes it so we don't do that.
Hmm.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, because I don't really want a tail.
No, not today. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Question, wouldn't the natural lifespan be limited by the age of the Earth? So eventually the sun will...
So it doesn't live forever, Al.
Expand.
Technically, you're right about that.
Forever is a really long
time,
Al.
Yes, you're right. You know, if we're going to get down to brass tacks, exactly, very specifically, can't live forever.
What's going on with gas standards?
The Obama administration just signed off on the USA's first rules on greenhouse gas emissions, which sets fuel standards. And so the new miles per gallon, the new average that all the cars need to meet is 35.5 miles per gallon. So that's an increase of 10 miles per gallon from what we have right now by 2016. And so as a result, this is just a quick mention, as a result, we'll probably have like 2012 model year cars will be probably about $400 more expensive. And by 2016, we'll probably have almost $1,000 added cost on our vehicles because they'll have to hit these new regulations on average. However, we'll probably save quite a bit of money as far as gas, right? Because not only is gas expensive, but the price of gas will go up as we run out of it. So, they were estimating that over the life of a vehicle that you could save about $3,000. So that's definitely a lot more money. And, you know, I think it's a win-win-win. So in my opinion.
Thank you very much, Ben. Al, one more story before we do our break and then into our interview. You haven't talked about robots at all, and today is the launch of the iPad. So is there any way you have like a robot iPad thing?
Yes. Coincidentally, you said that. The headline for this story is Robots Agree iPhone Touchscreen is More Precise. There is a company out there that has a website. It's called labs.moto.com, and they just do all this analysis of just everything. And they came up with this application that you could run on a smartphone that allows you to draw an X pattern onto the screen, and then it will take the sensitivity of your finger, and depending on how straight that line is, it can tell how sensitive the touchpad is. Well, everybody's got different kinds of fingers, all this kind of stuff, so they decided, well, let's take this app and we'll use a robot finger and do it exactly precisely, the right amount of pressure and all that kind of stuff. And they tested all these different smartphones. And this is
the touchscreen smartphones,
yes. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a really neat kind of a graphic to look at. So you can see all the different ones they tested, the Apple iPhone, the HTC Droid, the Motorola Droid, the Nexus One, the Palm Pre, the BlackBerry. And you can see the results of what the robot did. Mm-hmm. You know, you can see the X pattern. Some of the X's are broken. Some of the lines are broken.
What's really interesting about this is that, you know, you don't really see feedback on what the computer, the phone itself, thinks your finger's doing, right? You just have your finger and you're trying to push buttons, and sometimes it's kind of hard, and most of the time it works pretty well on the iPhone or iPad Touch. And then when you see this, you see, oh my gosh, the data it's getting is actually kind of minimal on some of these. It's kind of doing a lot of guesswork almost.
Yeah, the Palm Pre, the X pattern was just all broken apart.
I wonder if that was like a broken Palm Pre.
I don't know, because it's pretty bad looking. But you know, they do say that, well, this is, you know, right now the iPhone has the sharpest, most accurate touchscreen because the lines are, you know, perfect in both the heavy pressure and the light pressure. But at the same time, they say, you know, it's really a question of time before touchscreens just, you know, sort of merge into the really, everybody's really amazing, like really beautiful. Good.
It's like early mice. You know, it used to be that you'd pay a lot of money for a really good mouse, and older mouse. Mm-hmm. Another mouse wouldn't be so good. But over time, it's like, you know what, the $10 mice are really good. The real thing now is kind of the ergonomics of it. That's the thing you want to pay attention to.
It's worth looking at this website anyway, because they have all these neat little tests and stuff that they do on all things. You know.
And I got to say that actually I have used really high quality mice, and they're pretty awesome. But anyway, okay, so that will be up on geekspeak.org.
Yes,
all the stuff we talk about, of course, is up at geekspeak.org. Mm-hmm. And Geekspeak on KUSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. You know, the geeky person that I am, every time I read Henry's thing, Dr. Ramirez's thing, I think people don't know why he's using less radiation, how that's possible. Like, it seems very catchy. Mm-hmm. And I think I've explained it in past shows. And if you're really curious, you can call up sometime. But I'm not going to explain it now. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. And my name is Lyle Troxell. In the air and with me are geeks Al Luckow and Ben Jaffe. Answering phones is Rick Philman. But we're not doing general calls because we have a guest. We have Brian Covey from the Omni Group. And he'll be joining us in just a minute more. This is the point when I would say, Ben, what's a cool science blog? And you'd say...
Oh, cool. Science blog. I'm glad you asked. Yeah. So I already explained basically what it does. I was a little bit sad, though, because my favorite blog, my favorite astronomy blog is called Bad Astronomy. It's run by Phil Plait. No, it's not. You'd think that would be barium, right? B-A, right. Barium, Bad Astronomy. But no, the barium stood for the Barmonger Science Blog, which I haven't heard of, so it's probably not as good. No, that's not true. But So
you can learn about this podcast up at geekspeak.org.
Yes, indeed. Science blog thing, not podcast, but...
All right. Yeah. Great. Thank you very much. The theme song today was from Michael Newman from Pet Star Music. If you'd like to submit a theme for us to all you have to do is create some music that you think is geeky and appropriate for us. Probably no words, but words sometimes are really cool. I mean, I got to say. Any case, submit it to us, and we'll play it as long as you agree to our Creative Commons license. Geekspeak is Creative Commons, which means that you can use it and share it. It's a share alike. Non-commercial Creative Commons. You can learn more about that at geekspeak.org if you would like. Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. David Allen is the author of Getting Things Done, and Getting Things Done is an organization method that's described, rests on the principle that a person needs to move all the tasks out of their mind by recording them externally in something that's trusted, and that way the mind is freed from the job of remembering everything that needs to be done and can concentrate on actually performing those tasks. That's a general concept. OmniGroup makes an application called OmniFocus, and today we have Brian Covey, a support engineer, or a super support ninja, as they're called there, on from Seattle. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hello. Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, Brian, Omni Group, I started knowing when I think OS X first came out on Power PCs, and the
Omni
app
Outliner.
Was Omni Outliner.
Oh, yeah.
Great, yep. Great application. You've been with the company like that long, right?
Yeah, terrifyingly, I joined the company in 2001, so my 10-year anniversary is just around the corner, which cool. is awesome, but terrifying.
And you're a support expert, and this means you know all the apps really, really well, right?
I by virtue of being hired first, I ended up in charge of all of the support guys. So they actually know the apps far better than I do. And I just sort of try to answer where I'm able to with my vestigial T-Rex like, you know, limbs at this point.
Omni Outliner is an outlining application. And it actually sounds a little bit like Omni Focus in some sense. Can you describe Omni Outliner? Because it's kind of your one I first learned.
Sure. Omni Outliner is can be a little bit tough to describe. It's an application that we describe as a structured writing tool. It is a little bit like a word processor and a little bit like a spreadsheet. It kind of like if you drew a Venn diagram, one of those diagrams with the overlapping circles, Omni Outliner would live right in between. So it's got levels of indentation, just like we learned in grade school. You can do level-based styling for you. You can have multiple columns of information that sort of like you'll have if you do a quick budget sheet, you know, you'll have your upper level will be year, and then going a level, it'll be quarters, and those numbers will all sum themselves up. So you don't have to mess around with formulas the way you do in a more traditional spreadsheet app.
Yeah. And that's the thing I've noticed about your apps is there's like a simplicity to them. OmniGraphle is the one I've used the most for diagramming flowcharts and things. It's a flowchart application, but it's much more than that too. I use it for making signs. I use it for anytime I do a complicated application I want to teach how to program. I do like an application, I'll outline it in OmniGraphle. Really great app for that. Mm-hmm. And these are all these are all paid apps, but you have great durations of free time, so you get to learn these apps quite a bit. Recently, I started using OmniFocus. I think I was reading 47 Folders blog, and OmniFocus is about getting things done. This is principle for how I already introduced it from David Allen. Mm-hmm. And the application basically allows you to quickly save all the tasks you have and then organize them into different contexts and projects.
Correct.
Can you describe that a little bit?
Sure. Okay, so the great thing about brains is they're good at thinking about stuff. The bad thing about brains is they're really bad at remembering the tons and tons and tons of stuff that they want to think about. So OmniFocus, like you mentioned, is based on the getting things done organizational system, which basically says you should get a trusted system that just allows you to very quickly capture all of those things that you want to work on and accomplish. So you can get it out of your brain. You don't have to worry about trying to remember it. And then once you've got your trusted system set up, you can just go ahead and look at your lists and figure out, oh, you know what? I'm in this place with these resources available to me. I should just go ahead and work on these three things and just go ahead and do stuff.
And you know what? What I'll do is I'll open up OmniFocus on my machine because I'm actually using it now. And actually, you also have an OmniFocus for the iPhone, and they sync together.
Correct, yes.
Which is the thing that allowed me to switch over to that. I usually, the way I've been doing getting things done for years now is having a stack of index cards in my back pocket. Yep. So I pull out index cards and I mark down. I normally don't categorize them that much, but basically I make sure to capture that. If I lose that, I'm really in bad shape because I won't remember things. And so my inbox right now in OmniFocus is a list of people to add to a party invites, a story idea for Geek Speak, another story idea for Geek Speak, that I need to email somebody about something. And then if I look through my different contexts, I have a whole thing that when I'm at my Mac online, I can do these things, right? Pay my PG&E bill, send a note to somebody else about something, set up the show for today. Oh, good. I already did that. Click. Done. So it allows me to not think about all the things I have to do. And then when I'm able to do things, like I have one that's called Hardware Store, right? So anytime I go in the hardware store, I've added all the stuff that I want to do in a hardware store to that list. So there's the, you know, getting the plumbing supplies I need. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool way of thinking and organizing. And I'm just curious, do you use this app?
I do. And especially as we get more projects going on, I find myself, like when we started out doing it, I was a little skeptical. I was like, this sounds like it might just be a really overly organized system of keeping lists.
Like a waste of time, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But as we ramp up more and more projects, you find yourself going, you know, this David Allen guy, he was really onto something. Yeah. Because so the I think the piece we maybe didn't describe yet was contexts. And so you have a list of items, and then you create a context, which basically could be your phone, could be the people you work with, and that allows you to sort of break down your tasks and see, I've got 17 different projects, but if I need, I'm in a meeting with one of my coworkers, I know that I need to talk to them about items A, B, and C from these disparate projects that could be scattered all over the map. So
right, the general concept is like with my boss, I need to talk to him about four different things.
Exactly.
So actually taken the things that I need to talk to my boss about. They're split into projects in one perspective, and the other perspective is they're under people boss. So when I click on people boss, if I have a meeting with him, I know, oh, these are the things I need to talk to him about. And it's really quite an effective way of organizing. The thing that – and I thought that you and I both are using it, and we get it. Mm-hmm. So Al, you're a very busy person, and you're constantly have multiple clients that you deal with. How do you make sure that you always achieve the goals necessary for these people? Do you do something similar to this?
It's a highly complex, proprietary, really super duper advanced method of post-it note arrangement that actually is really too difficult to describe on the radio. But, you know, there are things I've seen, I've used things like Shaker, and there's things where you just type, you type in your six things that you're interested in. This particular product, you know, I look at and I think, well, would I spend more time organizing than actually doing?
Right.
You know, is there a way that I can keep it in my head long enough? How much data goes in here? This isn't really a product you'd use for, say, writing.
No.
Because you don't really put that much information. You kind of put the titles and the descriptions. But your example of the hardware store is something I could actually use because I always go to the hardware store and say, what did I want to get when I was here last time? So that's starting to make sense to me, especially with the app that syncs to your phone, because then I have it with me. I mean, you know, you don't carry your laptop around with you everywhere, so it seems like more and more, if you don't have something that's going to sync to your smartphone, then, you know, you're kind of behind the times. But this does seem like a really, I mean, and I know when I was at Apple, everybody uses Omni stuff. I mean, they're crazy about it. They all love it. You know, so there's something to it, and basing it on this guy's book, I think is a wise move too. You know, you get engineers who create something and they create it just to create it, but then if you take some other thing and you combine the engineers with some other, you know, well thought out system, then you have like a killer app.
Yeah, and this really is. I mean, I remember my father did the same thing by having a clipboard around, right, with a pad of paper, and he'd write down the things he was going to do that day on the pad of paper.
Right.
And that was normally for errands when you're traveling around.
Mm-hmm.
But that everybody kind of does that, let me grab the five things I need to deal with, and then the longer form notes that are things you have to do later on. And to me what happens, and this I think it's a defect of myself, is that I don't have – like if you, Al, said to me, hey, Lyle, I need you to come over my house and make some Ethernet cables for me
because like, you know how to do it. Like last night?
I will totally forget about that completely unless I capture that, right?
Right.
So I didn't remember that until yesterday you said, hey, you know, those Ethernet cables, right? You know, yeah, you told me last week, right? I'm like, oh, right, yeah, okay, I'll come do that.
Yeah.
So if I don't have a system that helps me remember, I'm going to just piss everybody off.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And you know, you basically have to commit.
You have to really commit to this. That's the thing about the getting things done methodology. If you don't do it correctly, like you don't always do it in one trusted system, then you just pick notes, forget about it because you don't have to remember anymore, and then you never look at it again.
What are the printing capabilities of this app?
You can print. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we don't see folks using... I mean, folks will print out their lists from time to time if it helps them to sort of sit down and do what's called a review in paper form. But most folks seem to kind of stuff their data into the app and just interact with it there.
So it's mostly on the computer.
Yeah. But so the only reason I went to this app, of course, is because they've got the iPhone version. Because I'm iPhone with me. And every time you launch the iPhone app, it syncs to the server, my own server, right? So it's not even hosted by anybody else. It's hosted by me. So I'm constantly going back and forth on the desktop where I can really organize and write things down. And also a lot of my tasks are actually on the desktop versus the iPhone app where when I go to the hardware store, I open it up and go, oh, cool, there's the hardware store items.
Right.
So without the iPhone, it wouldn't really be functional. And I'm still carrying a pad of paper because I can't take people's information quickly enough.
Speaking of pads.
Well, Ben's got something.
Well, I have a quick question. Do you know if there are any plans to develop an Android app or if there is an Android app already developed? Because I have that exact same problem where, you know, you need it on the go and you also kind of need to just use it for everything. Otherwise, you're just going to forget about it. I have an Android app. Android. I don't have an iPhone, so.
Sure. We've gotten some requests for an Android app, and I don't think it's anything we're sort of inherently opposed to, but at this point, we're primarily Mac OS X based, so I wouldn't rule it out, and if folks want to see that happen, by all means, send us email and let us know, because the way we sort of approach our various projects is customers vote by telling us, I mean, it's not a direct democracy, obviously, but customers vote and say, we really want to see this, and you know, once we see a lot of demand for something, then we're like, okay, we should invest some resources in that direction.
Consider that another vote for it, then.
Okay, I can do that.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I was curious about the iPad. I mean, today's the day. What's the deal with, you know, you're going to be able to translate? Because it seems to me, you know, Lyle's dad carried a clipboard around. Actually, I carry a clipboard, too, sometimes.
I do, too, sometimes.
And it's that right, it's the right size, which is what the iPad is. So you have this great program you're doing everything on, and it's mostly the kind of thing you need to use on the computer, but your phone is kind of tiny. Are you going to have anything in particular that's designed for the iPad?
Yep. All of our productivity apps, and we've got five basically planned at this point, will be coming to the iPad, OmniFocus being one of them. We have two of them available today, OmniGraffle, which is we've got two drawing apps that are available today because drawing with your finger seemed like a strong iPad sort of thing to do. But OmniFocus for iPhone will run on your iPad, and we do plan to have an iPad customized version of the app available later on this year.
Yeah, that'd be great because you could listen more and stuff. So you're also doing OmniGraph Sketcher?
Correct. That's one of our apps,
And OmniGraph Sketcher, I haven't actually played with. I'm going to download and play with it. So you're at the office today, and it's a Saturday. Why are you there?
We are all sitting around waiting for the UPS guy to bring us geek Christmas toys.
So does that mean you guys haven't had an iPad, but you have two applications that are available today?
The really fun thing about iPad development is, well, the really fun and at the same time nerve-wracking thing about iPad development is that you're designing for hardware you don't actually have. You know, using a software simulator which uses a mouse, except you're designing software that people are going to use with their finger. So,
and I'm assuming that for like OmniGraph, which is a flowchart thing, you're going to be using two fingers to draw things and pinch things. And of course, you can't do that with a mouse. So you guys have all been developing and testing this thing with a mouse clicking like four times. It's going to be really nice to be able to use this application you've been working on for probably a couple of months with your actual fingers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is we managed to pull it off. The apps, the two apps that we started working on first are actually available today.
Okay, so some people must have gone to the Apple Store, and you have some people that have tried these apps, and you've seen it actually run?
We had, I believe, a couple of the engineers got to go down to Cupertino, although I suddenly wonder if I'm supposed to say that, so if a cone of silence descends over, you know what happened. But anyways,
they get fired.
For the most part, I mean, Apple provides a software simulator that will actually do, I mean, the mouse is a one finger click, and then if you hold down a key on your keyboard, it'll simulate the pinch gesture, so we can do essentially those two gestures. There's a bunch more
easily.
Stuff.
Yeah. Well, cool. I'm glad. I look forward to seeing this thing run. I'll be getting iPad in the next week. Al, you're getting one too? I'm getting one for work.
Should
for research,
be today.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I only get to play with it for a
it's
day.
Actually
until
from,
I get it
it's
actually
for my wife, but
oh, yeah,
I might. She might let me get near it. I don't know.
Hey, we are going to invite people to call in, ask us questions. We're staying on topic today. You can ask us about iPad development if you'd like. You can talk to us about any of the Omni group applications, or if you'd like to talk about getting things done in the methodology, the idea of task management and organization, please call in for that as well. Those are the topics we're dealing with today. The phone numbers are 476-2800, again, 476-2800, or toll free, that's toll free. I can't say that today. 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. We'll take your calls about all those things I just mentioned and probably a little bit more if you beg and plead.
Interesting. I think there's only 3,000 iPad-specific applications available today.
Yeah.
So that's good. Although the regular iPhone applications will run on the iPad.
Right.
They're just not specifically tailored for it.
Wait, only 3,000?
Right.
You've got to be kidding.
I know.
I can download all of those.
Yeah. I mean, that's to get into that first day is a big deal.
Now, Omni, we'd be remiss in saying that all the products we've talked about so far are paid applications, and I'm not necessarily endorsing them to go spend money, but I do like OmniFocus and OmniFocus for the iPhone. I paid for it myself. I like that much. In any case, there is OmniWeb, and there's a few things that are free. And Ben, talk about OmniWeb.
So OmniWeb, I'm using it right now. Actually, I use it as my main web browser. Awesome. Question for you then: is it the same group of engineers that are working on all of these applications, or is because OmniWeb is free? Is it kind of off in its own land, doing its own thing, or is it?
Last year, we took a couple of our applications and we moved them to sort of non-commercial status, OmniWeb being one of them. Mm-hmm. If we do OmniWeb 6, we may decide to start charging for it again. But OmniWeb 5, the current version, we're giving away, along with Omni Disk Sweeper and Omni, a couple of other apps. All of our app names start with Omni, so you're going to hear that syllable a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a great browser. I love it. I still use it every day, and they will pry it from our collective cold, dead fingers.
What does it do, Ben?
A couple things that I really like. For one, when you open up multiple tabs, it opens up a pane on the left, and you can see all of your
I've been looking at that. That's why I pointed them.
It's on my screen right now. That's how I organize my GeekSpeak stories.
Yeah.
So that's one.
So if you're a web user that's uses a browser a lot and opens new tabs across the top, normally as you get 15 tabs or so, all you can see is a few letters of each tab, unless it's the one open. It's hard to navigate through. And on OmniWeb, it's on the left hand side in a stack.
Exactly. So not only can you see more width on the titles, but it's also not using your vertical screen real estate, especially now that screens are getting wider and wider and shorter and shorter. And then the other thing that I really, I mean, there are a lot of things that I like about it, but one of the other things I like is workspaces, where you can have different workspaces and you can have several tab groups and windows full of tabs open, and then you can just save that as a workspace and switch over to a completely clean workspace. And so a lot of times I'll have several browser windows and tabs open, and then Friday evening will come and I'll think, okay, I need to go look for stories for GeekSpeak, and so I'll start a new workspace so I don't have all of the clutter and everything.
Nice. And those workspaces are saved when you restart?
Yeah, and also somehow it manages to work like a new browser with every window I open. I don't understand it, because with the exception of Google Chrome, like Safari doesn't work like that. But OmniWeb is WebKit.
If something crashes, it only takes down that one work group.
No. I don't think it's. I mean, maybe you can answer this. Do you know if each window has its own thread or?
No. I mean, if the browser goes down, it's going to take everything down. But we do restore the state of your workspace when you come back. So
right. Yeah, cool. I don't know what it is. Then
let's take a call from Elkhorn Slough. Bruce, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, thank you. I had a question in terms of the iPad. One was in terms of when Flash was likely to be supported, because it seemed a huge omission to not have that, much like the first generation of BlackBerry. With video, one of the first things you run into is that you don't have like an MP3 standard.
Right.
With video, especially crossing Windows and Mac platforms.
Apple's stance on this is no Flash for the iPad, no Flash for the iPhone, and they don't want it and they don't care. And I think that this is actually really threatening to Flash. I think that this is going to potentially really damage Flash, Adobe's ownership of it, if you will. Al, what's your thought on this?
They have some workarounds. There's a few things that are going to you know, have it function on a limited basis, but I wouldn't hold your breath on, you know, playing your Flash games.
And here's the thing, Adobe
CS... It's not so much playing it as generating it. In other words, we do instructional videos and things. And before I was like, okay, do we create a VOB or a QuickTime or a WMV file? And all of a sudden it was like, okay, we can just do Flash. And anybody who's got a browser can do it.
And so here's the thing, you know, like YouTube works, they don't have Flash delivered to the iPhone. They're encoding something else. They're encoding... Apple's codec.
H.264.
Yeah. And here's another thing. Adobe's CS5, the next suite, is going to have a compiler for the iPhone, right? It's not going to compile Flash that works on the iPhone. It's going to compile from the Flash development environment. It will actually compile stuff that will work on the iPhone iPod Touch. So Adobe's already kind of losing the battle, right? Because they're changing their product to match what Apple wants. The thing is, Flash has some pretty serious problems, and it's kind of bloated. And it filled this niche, in my perspective, that because the standards weren't up to par and couldn't do the things they needed to do, Adobe or Macromedia, I guess, succeeded in making Flash very, very functional. But the new HTML spec has a video tag, right? You can actually use video like you can use an image. The browser should support it natively. It's going to get easier.
The question is the overhead. In other words, like a WMV file is going to be double the size of a QuickTime, and
that's
a QuickTime is 10 times the size of Flash.
Well, no. What I would say is that the encoding quality is it's all about encoding quality, right? Mm-hmm. Flash is a very easy tool to use, and it'll encode for you in a way that will be easy for your users to use it. Therefore, we love it, right? Are you using training modules, like a lot of screensavers and things of that nature, or screen captures?
No, we actually create training instructional videos. And like I said, before we had to create ones for DVD players, another one for Win PCs, and the third version for Apple PCs, and we found that at least with Flash we could get away from having to do, we could have one something that cross-platform.
I feel your pain, mm-hmm. and you're going to have to do
but,
a
I mean,
couple.
To think that people are not going to use Flash, and instead, unless there's some other option, Windows Media Player doesn't really provide a solution.
There is, looking towards the future, towards Adobe Labs, there is a packager for the iPhone, and I'm going to post that link right now to our and after the show, it'll be available, and you can go check this out. And
what is it?
It's a packager for iPhone.
It's the CS5 thing.
It's a CS5 thing. It's a future thing. If you want to look and see more information on this, it's...
I bet that's how the video is being done for CS5 Flash, right? You're actually going to encode two versions.
Well, I don't think so. I know that the Apple's reasoning is that Apple's excuse, I think, is that they don't allow... code interpretation at runtime, and so CS5
except for JavaScript.
Perhaps an excuse or whatever. So Adobe has finally said, okay, fine. So now you can export Flash files specifically for the iPhone, but you can't run Flash apps that haven't been exported for the iPhone. You have to export them for the iPhone.
Ryan, do you have more information on this?
Well, I think that what is going to happen is there's a evolving web browser standard that specifies a certain video codec, and just sort of like when Mozilla first came out, it was not really a big factor, and it's kind of increasingly sort of occupying that. If you design for Mozilla, it'll work everywhere.
I mean, let's remember at one point, some browsers supported animated GIFs and some browsers didn't, right? This is a standard thing where we want something and some browsers don't support it, and then those browsers are losing out, and then the next browser functions, right? And these plugins that were functional from like Adobe Flash, that's a Band-Aid for a while. At some point, your browser will be able to do PNGs, transparency, alpha, right? And then you'll be golden.
And it has a lot more.
Most of that technology is going to move inside the browser,
including the programming environment, right? All the programming. When you really look at what Flash can do right now, which you can't do with other technologies in the newest browsers, the biggest thing is sound, right? That's the thing that can't be done very well inside the most recent HTML and the most recent JavaScript. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bruce, and good luck.
Thanks.
The thing is, right now, it stinks for people. You know, it's like it's not a good thing for people at all. So, let's go ahead and go to one more. Well, let's go to another call in Watsonville. Al, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, this is Al.
Hi.
Hey, so I want to get back to that topic you were talking about earlier with the organizer tool getting things done.
Yeah.
I'm a lowly BlackBerry user and tied quite happily to my Windows environment, and for that, I mean, I've just been using the Outlook tasks tool and categories but of course it's not hierarchical, it's not integrated. And I'm wondering if there's an application similar to what you mentioned in the BlackBerry world.
In a Windows environment too. Brian, do you know your pseudo and competitors?
We get some requests for BlackBerry apps, and honestly, we don't have a good recommendation. I'm sure there's something out there that's probably really awesome. I just don't know what it is.
You know what I would do is I would go ahead and I'll put this up on the site, but if you look at David Allen's website, Getting Things Done,
yeah,
he actually
true.
Recommends applications. Of course, OmniFocus is recommended to there, I think, and other apps of that sort. And you'll be able to find a Windows app that is – you just kind of have to get in that world of people that use it. I know it exists. You'll be able to find it, but I don't have it off the top of my head. Thanks, Al, for the call.
Yeah. There was one for the Palm I used years ago, and it was awesome. But, I'm trying to get to the Windows world. Okay, thanks.
Good luck. Hey, you know, if you do find it, would you let us know, and I'll add it to the notes of this page?
Sure.
I might take a look, too. Thanks so much.
Cool, thanks.
It's funny. I'm a split user. I use Windows, and I use Mac all the time. Mm-hmm. But now that I have my iPhone, it kind of traps me in that Mac environment much more so than I expected. I think we're going to take one more call from Charlottesville, Virginia. Tom, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, I'm a 60-year-old guy who just sort of got into Macs in the second half of the 80s, mm-hmm. and I've been through every Macintosh that's come along pretty much, so I've been pretty dedicated to using the equipment. And I've dragged along InTouch software with me to sort of manage my life, uh-huh. and then there was a point in which I really need to have more mobility, so I got a Palm device and used Palm Desktop. And then I sort of fell behind on all of that because it didn't perform for me in the way I really wanted. And now I'm revisiting the whole thing. And what I found was that I have updated my Palm Desktop, but I can't seem to transfer it to any mobile device. So I'm wondering whether the iPad...
What is it, the memos or the contact information?
I really want the memos.
Yeah. So can you export in Palm the memos? Do you know?
I can export them out. They go out as a tab delimited or something
of
that nature.
But
I can't...
Once you get in a tab limit format, getting it back into the iPad or the environment, it's going to be functional. I don't have a solution right off the top of your head, but you're not in a dead end here. This is a simple, like, if I had a half day with you and some time to program, I could do this. So what I would recommend is finding like a high school student who's kind of geeky that wants to do a task for you and kind of, you know, buy them lunch or give them $100 and have them kind of migrate your data for you. You really need someone that's a little bit of a programmer, a little bit of a hacker to solve this. Mm-hmm.
I see.
And I think that's all I'm going to have to leave it with because we're running out of time. Thanks, Tom, for the call.
You're welcome.
That's the data migration like that is definitely something you've got to take some time with. Hey, Brian, thank you so much for joining us on GeekSpeak. We're almost done with the show. Is there anything you wanted to push or recommend?
No, just to say if you're interested in learning more about us, go to our website, which is omnigroup.com. And if you want to know more about David Allen's Getting Things Done system, go to davidco.com. And thanks, guys. It's been fun.
Thank you so much for the call or for joining us. Thanks. Take care. We'll have to get him on again, too, because we didn't cover nearly as much stuff. In just a second, we're going to do the USB of the week. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by University of Advancing Technology, offering master's degree programs for geeks to become innovators of the future. Classes forming now. uat.edu/masters. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Open daily. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Al Luckow with GeekSpeak's Crazy USB Device of the Week. With springtime upon the land, many of us long to get out of our cubicles and frolic in the daisies and chamomile and forget-me-nots blooming all around. But alas, we must all trudge back to work, feeling like puppies who have lost their favorite squeaky toy. Well, there's still hope, especially if you have a USB scent flower. This is a brightly colored plastic flower which contains a scent cartridge. It plugs into your USB port and slowly gives off the beautiful scents you are missing, such as lavender, jasmine, and ocean breeze. As far as I can tell, they are kind of like Glade plugins, except, you know, with a USB plug. Amazingly, they have their own Facebook page, just like my cat Crystal. Link is up on geekspeak.org.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Today with David Lawrence and is used with permission. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. The Geeks Today, we're Al Luckow, Ben Jaffe. My name's Lyle Troxell. And of course, you can go to geekspeak.org for all the news and information we cover today. I'll see you next week, and thanks for listening.